What a jerk.
What a jerk, what a jerk, what a mighty good jerk.
What a jerk, what a mighty good jerk.
All right.
Just so you know, my first question for Murmur is going to be, what did happen to En Vogue?
We'll be able to answer that very appropriately.
Bop, bop.
Bink, bink, tink, bank, tink, 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 tink. No, you're never gonna get it. Ow!
No, you're never gonna get it.
Oh, not this time.
No, never gonna get it.
My love. Never, never gonna get it.
So to answer your question, we are in
Vogue. I am Philip.
I am Matt.
First we'll have a little chat,
then put on our Invovers.
Now it's time for Next at Bat.
And we're here today with Murmur. Hi, Murmur.
Hi.
Hey, guys.
Oh, hello.
Can you three introduce yourselves, please?
Sure. My name is Megan.
Oh, well, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Eric.
With a C.
And just so you guys know, actually, our name... Yeah. I wrote this to them in an email, and they were like, that makes no sense, but we like the name Murmur. I was like, if you take my name as starts with an M, so it's Murmur.
That's really? How it happened.
That's actually how the name
Murmur came about, and they were both like, you're an idiot.
But it's a good
but
name.
But we love it.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure I literally wrote back, one, that name is great. Two, that makes no damn sense.
But it doesn't matter because the name, it's a great team name.
Thank you.
Yeah, and for, we'll get into the Troika thing in a bit, but you know, for Troika, you need a memorable team name.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and since there's been one Troika and there's been one winner, established.
And who was the winner again? I can't remember.
It
was a little group named.
It was us.
It was us. Okay, cool.
It was 100%.
And speaking of winners, as always, I am here today joined by my co-host.
Oh, you can't be talking about me.
I am.
He's prefaced that with winner.
Yeah, I've seen
Philip Civendet, everybody, and the winningest podcast in this hostiness of all times is.
Don't ruin this, Philip. I'm Matt McLeod. Thanks, Philip. We'll see you in about. 22 minutes or so. Yeah. This group did form out of Troika, which is improv Armageddon.
Armageddon.
Yeah, improv Armageddon. No, I was going to say, I'm trying to think of what is that when
Thunderdome.
Thunderdome. Or when you get a bunch of cars together and the last.
A circus.
A car rally.
A car
circus.
When the cars.
Like, monster truck.
Evil Knievel.
They ram into each other until the last one
Twisted
running
Twisted
Metal
wins. Black.
Yeah, basically. You know what I'm talking about, right?
A big truck fight.
Yeah, it's a
monster
fight.
Truck rally.
That sounds like the most what we're trying to say.
Yeah,
that's exactly
like
what Troika is.
I'm gonna remember what this is,
but rookie grave digger.
Destruction Derby. Right?
Destruction Derby. Thank you, Philip. See, you are the best. You win.
That is
things.
What I'm here for.
Yeah, Destruction Derby. It's basically an improv Destruction Derby.
We all get in giant cars, and then drive at one another.
I like to think that you three together are the car.
Ooh.
Like Transformer style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean the right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm so glad that people are gonna know that that's where that name came from now.
But Troika is put on.
You're just gonna be like, that's it? What a bunch of bull.
You know, the name could have been
That's true. But I feel like that's not
wouldn't
not
have been successful.
Could have also been
Well, that's like
how are they?
IA.
Yes.
So it's Troika is put it's on its second year now over at Huge Theater, and it's produced by Dan and Ellen Jaquette. And so you guys were grouped together randomly, which is what Troika does. And could you tell us a little bit about the process of kind of coming together, probably maybe not even knowing each other, or at least not knowing each other well, certainly not knowing each other as improvisers?
Well, the whole thing was that you get placed with people that you have never worked with before.
Right.
And so, I don't know, I met Eric for coffee. And that was like me meeting him for the first time. And then I knew Megan,
but not like really super.
Did we know each other?
Like knew you, but that's just because I stalked you.
I'm the biggest asshole.
Erin knew you,
remember.
But you didn't know her.
Yeah,
wow.
I knew a lot about
you,
Megan.
Before that.
I knew everything.
It was pretty great, though. I felt like we got real lucky. I felt like that from the beginning. From the very beginning, it was like, oh, yeah, we're pretty lucky.
It was like an instant click. Yeah, as soon as we all came together in the same room, it was like, well, this is going to work.
Yeah, man.
I actually don't even think we thought very much. Megan was like, I've got an idea. And then she told us, and then we were like, okay.
And then we just started doing it.
Yeah. That made me the happiest, because I had been trying to find an outlet for the perfect scene for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, you guys, let's try this. Maybe it'll work and maybe it won't. And then the three of us tried it and it was like, oh yeah, never mind. This is the perfect set of people I could have found for this, that we could have found for this show format. Jeez.
The perfect scene is your form. Could you talk a little bit about what that looks like for anybody that hasn't seen you perform it before?
So our format was a little bit different last year from the way it is now, because we're doing a run at Huge right now. Mm-hmm. So it was originally, I saw the format was developed by a group called Project. They're from Canada. I think they're from Toronto, but they might be from Vancouver. Either way, they're defunct now.
Same difference.
Right. They're on opposite sides of Canada, but who cares?
It's all Canada.
It really is.
Canada is Canada.
Anyways, and I had seen them do this format at Out of Bounds like in 2010, I want to say, and was just like, that format rocks. And so basically we do a beginning scene. We do like a base scene of like five, seven minutes long. And then we all get together after that scene and we talk about what could make the scene more perfect. And
just right there on stage, in front of the audience,
okay. As ourselves.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then we give suggestions on ways to improve the scene based on, you know, a change in that person's character, or, mm-hmm. you know, maybe we didn't enjoy exactly where the plot line was going initially, so we talk about how we're going to tweak it, and then we break and start the scene again.
And then we do the scene again, and we just do a couple of iterations of it, until at the end we have... Actually, the perfect improv scene.
Every time.
We nail it. Right now, we're on a 100% nailing it percentage.
Nice.
Yeah, we're really good at perfect. So.
Yeah, we are.
I don't even have anything to add to that. Because
it was perfect.
Yeah. It was.
Yeah.
It's perfect Absolutely. The first time around.
Yeah, and our format's a little bit different now since we went from 25 minutes to 45.
Right.
So we introduced the idea of getting more feedback from the audience throughout the show mm-hmm. by having them beforehand fill out slips that have prompts like give us a location, give us a time period, give us a character trait or an object. And then in between, in addition to like giving our own notes, people can't see that I'm doing air quotes around the word notes. Notes in the scene.
You're only doing one air quote too, so it's kind of
notes.
Like
notes.
It's basically open-ended. For the rest of exactly. this podcast, she is fingertip. And then she'll just leave and do the other one.
Inside the quotes the whole time, you guys. We'll also pull things out of the box, pull these suggestions out of the box, and use them to make our scene more perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Because we respect Minneapolis audiences. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. So we do.
That's really all that.
We have that addition, and then we also added Jack Barrett on keys.
Which is always a terrific addition.
Yeah,
exactly.
So with 45 minutes, you are still working with a singular scene. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Yep. Wow. So I guess I have a few questions for you. First of all... I think the question that jumps to mind for me and when I've spoken, I don't think I've talked about this with any of you three, but when talking about your group with other people, they've also wondered, have you ever found like the first scene, like you jump out maybe without the energy that you want or something like that, and the first scene is awkward and you find yourself in a place that you don't really dig, but you have to keep revisiting it? Or is the form where you get to kind of discuss and tweak, is it always real easy to slip back into?
I feel like there have been base scenes that were like obviously imperfect because that's the idea.
Yeah, and it's not always a complete revisit to that initial scene.
Sure.
You know, it's not like a constant replay where we're doing that same bass over right. and over again with different elements added to it.
Mm-hmm.
It changes a lot, but some of the elements continue through to all of the other iterations.
Mm-hmm.
That was a terrible explanation, and I don't know if somebody else...
I know what you mean, but I've yeah. seen it, so I...
I would say that it just depends on, like, the distance that we take it away from the initial scene. Like, if we mm-hmm. really love the initial scene, we're less likely to tinker with, like, the foundational parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas okay. if it's something that we weren't as happy with, then we're going to make more extreme changes to it so mm-hmm. that we don't have to keep going back to something that's might be, like, unenjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I just think a lot of times that, pardon me, the what we take from that initial scene changes show to show. So sometimes we're like, these are really cool characters, mm-hmm. but, you know, this setting is kind of lacking, or it's not really sure. giving it. But sometimes maybe we're like, these characters kind of suck, but the themes were really cool.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So let's stick with those themes, but maybe instead of a mother and daughter, it's actually a couple of coworkers or something like that. So it's just like a different way of looking mm-hmm. at just kind of what we think that scene's, that night scene is kind of supposed to be.
Cool.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And when you're and when you do the meta commentary on stage, which I'm guessing is kind of what you refer to it as, is that
we've never called it meta commentary.
Really?
But,
I mean, that is that's smarter, technically what it is.
Maybe
smarter it's word is. Than any of us has come up with.
I don't know.
It's like
talking about the scene that you just did.
Yeah.
As an exercise.
I personally, in my head, I call it chatty notes time.
I think I just call it notes. Like we stop the scene, we swipe, we all come together and we talk about it. Like, oh, and we always yeah. say what a great scene it was initially.
Yes, we do always, yeah. we always hit that because it is like we are playing with the idea of like what is perfect anyways. Mm-hmm. Not to get all philosophical up in here, but sure. what is perfect anyways? But we always make sure to like before we start talking about what we should change, being like
that was really good, you guys.
Let's acknowledge that scene was really
good.
It
was really good.
That was a really good scene. but it wasn't perfect.
Right.
So let's talk about that. Like, do you guys approach this as if it's a game, or do you actually are you really attempting to create a perfect scene?
I think there's an attempt to create the perfect scene, but we are able to see the game within
mm-hmm.
our format. You know, the little tropes that we're going to hit. You know, the beats that we're going to hit in each of the scenes, or I don't know.
I guess I've always seen it as like a. It's like a facade on a building, right? It's like we're calling the front of the building the perfect scene, but what's really holding that building up is like all of the fun that we have trying to create that. So I guess what I'm saying is that for me, it's always been more of a game as opposed to actually trying to create like a perfect scene. I used quotes again.
That's right. You just closed.
She closed yeah. it this time.
Loop closed. My initial response would just be to say both.
Yeah. Okay.
I guess like, I mean, I guess if you want to try and break down improv into kind of two different ideas,
mm-hmm.
Which I don't necessarily believe, but it kind of at the poles, there's kind of the very game heavy, and then there's the very relationship kind of thematic heavy.
Sure.
And I think we try to find a way to do both of those mm-hmm. justice.
Mm-hmm.
And just that it's at its very simplest, our structure looks like just kind of like a replay. Mm-hmm. But it's not that simple, and we also like to have these long scenes that'll get serious
yeah.
and weird and touch on a lot of relationship stuff, but then there is still this kind of game kind of tingling underneath. It's kind of cool. So it's I don't know. I think that's why I like it a lot, because
sure.
my roots are in short form improv.
Yeah, I was gonna bring that up. All three of you have a pretty significant short form background too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so like, and I always dug that. And the reason that I took to it so quickly is because I always was just like quick, and I would BS with my friends, and mm-hmm. like that came to me easy. But then I started doing long form, and that was really cool, and I like the idea of a story and something that kind of has a beginning, middle, and end, and like, but like, I never want to let go of either, and this is like, I think the only group I've ever been in where I can for sure comfortably do both, and not feel like I'm selling something short or I'm being too jokey for something. So I think that's kind of what has been very cool about this structure.
I think also too, like we brought Rita Borsma in to coach us a little bit,
which was amazing.
But she kind of hit the nail on the head too, in the balance between, you know, are we really striving for something perfect, or, you know, are we focused on the game? You know, we make this promise to the audience of delivering the perfect scene. So I think that we do have to keep both of those things in mind. We go out there with the intent of having fun, doing something that we enjoy, and, you know, blending those two worlds that Eric was talking about. And our, you know, I don't know, our onstage chemistry allows us to do that. But I think that we still do it with the intent of delivering our promise of the perfect scene. So,
I feel like this is actually a super enlightening and helpful thing that happened yesterday. We had our first Friday show last night, and afterwards, Butch, who was doing the tech, came up to me and he was like, "You know, like a 1920s Bible retelling. That's something you're never going to see again."
Right.
And I was like...
I'm assuming that happened.
That was real life. That happened.
That happened. Our last scene turned into a 1920s biblical analogy. Yep. And so I feel like... I was like, oh, it actually, like, I feel... It made me feel all of a sudden... It was like, do you know what? I feel like that's maybe what I've loved so much about this show, is that we're promising the perfect scene... But even if we never deliver on that, because again, like, what is the nebulous definition of perfect?
Right. Yeah.
What we are delivering is something that you will probably never see again.
Yes.
Because the format lends itself to creating such a bizarre set of situations and circumstances and characters that it's just like, yeah, when are you going to pull two slips of paper out of a hat that say 1920s and Bible and then take a scene that you already were telling a story in and put that layer onto it.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've always thought was so cool about your form, kind of stepping out of the, maybe I'm not fully stepping out of the, you know, theory analysis stuff, but as a fan of your group, one of the things that I always thought was so cool about your form is that it allows you to kind of dive further down the rabbit hole in kind of a unique way. Compared to really any other group out there, at least in the Twin Cities, you're able to attack depth in the scene work in a completely different way, and go back over themes or characters or whatever that you want to do, and allow you to go deeper and deeper and deeper into that, but with a restart. Consistent restart points, which, allows you to get into that weirdness, but it's completely earned weirdness. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's a built weirdness for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's leveled heightening. It's not just like jumping to the moon. You're gradually building a ladder to the moon that completely makes sense to the audience. Do you want to talk about your experience doing that sort of thing?
I think one of the nicest things about, especially the original format, is like it lets you make people do things or put yourself in the situation to do things that you've always wanted to see and or do. If it's just like, oh yeah, I always wanted to see a film noir about a tennis pro.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like if we have a scene about a tennis pro, I get to tell you to make it a film noir by under the guise of giving these notes. Right. And I feel like I really hope that the audience, when they're giving us suggestions, has a little bit of that spirit in there too, of like, oh man, do you know what I've never seen and would love to see? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, you know, go for it.
Those idiosyncratic moments.
Yeah. I think also too, like at this point we have such a trust with one another that even if we were to say, like, I don't know how else to put this, but we pimp each other out pretty hard, you know, by saying, oh,
we use that term on here.
Okay, good.
I know pimping is a sensitive subject for some people.
Pimping is pimping, while not easy, is okay.
Okay, well, mine was pimping with the apostrophe at the end. And
wait, I feel like pimping with an apostrophe at the end is an adjective, not a verb.
God damn it.
Oh my God. Well, so would you do this?
No, I mean, it could be a gerund. It could be a gerund.
I don't know what a gerund is, Matt. Did you bring me on here to make me feel stupid?
No.
All I wanted to say was that I trust you guys, and I know that you trust me. So if I'm going to tell you that I want you to be a Pokemon, you're going to be a Pokemon, and you're going to be the best damn Pokemon that ever existed. And that's okay. And we're okay with that. Like Megan said, with the previous format, it was all us coming up with the ways that it was going to change. And you have to have that level of trust in order to be like, well, we're going to probably tell somebody to do something a little bizarre.
Pimping.
Pimping.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Or we could just change it from now on. It's like Pippin, like Scotty.
We could do that. That's
that doesn't make any sense. But let's
without
just do
Scottie
it.
Pippen, would Michael Jordan be the player that he was?
No.
So there you go. Not.
Or B.J. Armstrong.
Right.
We're each that's other's Scottie Pippen, you guys.
Bill Paxton. we're everybody's Scottie Pippen. If I can go on stage and always be your number two, and you think the same thing, then that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Right.
Basketball.
Hey guys, if I could just be your Bill Cartwright, I'd be happy.
You're the Will Peltier in my heart.
these metaphors are so above me right now. I have no idea what you guys are saying.
And another three listening at home.
Yeah.
Everyone else is like, what's going on? What's a Steve Kerr?
You mean the coach?
I know Harvey Grant. Who's this whore he's just become?
Oh, Lord.
Does anybody know
Harvey Grant? I don't think anything just... No. Even Horace disowned him.
Yeah, even Horace forgot who he was.
I can't see you with my rec specs. Oh, okay. I think everyone's like nice and glazed over now. Let's get back to the regularly scheduled program.
I'm going to bring back the Matt's Pantry of questions.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Matt's Pantry.
Yeah. Matt's Pantry.
It's a terribly named, it needs a name.
Yeah, actually, you guys should suggest a name.
Yeah, suggest a name,
after
please.
Find out what it is.
I'm asking kind of the same sorts of questions to just about every group. We'll go from here. If you could improvise with anybody from history, who would it be? Try to answer fast.
William Shakespeare.
She's shaking. Visibly shaking.
It's a lot of pressure. There's like a lot of people that would be fun to improvise with. I choose Abe Lincoln.
Yeah, just because he always gets suggested.
No. While he does always get suggested, I feel like there would be a good dynamic between the two of us. Like, he's super tall and I'm not that tall. And then he would always give an honest response to things. And I would try to mess him up. Don't you think that'd be fun, you guys?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes, definitely.
How about, man, this is hard. I don't know if I believe this, but I don't not believe it. Maybe like Steve Martin.
Oh, yeah. Nice. You went legit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
My answer
history's
was
hard.
Legit.
Well, here, can we discuss this then?
This is
I
like,
don't know if I think yeah. Will Shakespeare would be that. And this is just maybe, and you probably know more about Bill than I do. I've only read like two Shakespeare plays.
Yeah, okay.
And seen another two.
Yeah.
Including Titus, so I mean, come on.
Yeah, Titus Andronicus, not one of his stellar works.
No.
A little creepy.
But I don't know. Is someone who like is that written in that?
Well, a lot of his plays were works in progress.
Did they
like,
workshop
they were,
them a little
yeah,
bit?
Yeah, they were all workshopped.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. I'll pull that
there
hold
you up. Go.
Yeah, he was a huge fan of Commedia dell'arte. Early Italian improvisation.
I'm staying with Abe Lincoln.
Do you want to question anyone else's decisions, Eric?
I'm going to go with Horace Grant.
All right, second question. If you guys could layer any classical improv form into the form that you currently use, what would you layer in? Or traditional?
So I just had this thought, and maybe you guys have already thought of this, but I just thought of it now. But our show's really just a herald. And like the kind of break scenes are just when are our meta commentary scenes.
Our meta commentary.
Meta commentary.
Thank you, Matt McLeod.
That's what it always felt like to me.
So. I think that is just a smarter way of saying what we were doing the whole time.
Like, for like a year, we could have just been like, well, we'll just do a different Herald. And just walk away.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's like, that's a pretty good fit.
Mm-hmm. I guess we could, I would, if I had to pick one that was like different, I would maybe pick like a, I don't have an answer. Never mind.
I think it'd be cool if you guys did a LeBron. And then talked about it, and then reran it again.
And then
I could see that. That could be real cool.
That's just me.
I'm not Harold Grant.
They're lesser known God brother.
Damn it! Go up.
Even I don't remember.
No one remembers Harold Grant.
No, you said I like LeRond. Like that's pretty good.
LeRond Jeremy.
And finally,
moving on.
If there was one scene that you ran out of time, you wish you could have done one more time from one of your shows, what would it be? And it could be different for each of you.
I don't know that I feel like there are any scenes that I felt like I wish could have kept going, but there are definitely, we've done practice sets that I was just like, holy shit, I wish an audience had seen that because that kicked ass.
That was exactly where my brain went
to. Early on, way early on in our rehearsal one, we did
Batman one. That was right? What I was thinking of.
We did this like insane, like Batman, so Alfred and Robin scene.
It was like, I think that was like a before...
I think that was before our first rehearsal.
It was our second rehearsal.
Okay, yeah.
It was our second rehearsal, and we just like fucking nailed it.
Oh my God.
And it was insane. So I always wished that like that could have
That we
been.
Actually had an audience for that.
Exactly. Because one of the lovely things about our format is that we'd get to do the scenes as much as you could ever want to do a scene.
Yeah.
Ever.
Right.
So it's hard to like do a set where you do the same scene four times and then be like, man, I really wish I could have done that scene one more time.
Yeah, and we're calling our own, we're cutting
we
it ourselves.
Our show.
So.
Right.
It's not like we're getting blacked out and we're like,
and we're
we had more to say.
Yeah.
I think, and it's funny because I think the first time we performed for Troika, we were so jacked up and excited for our, and it was like a 22 minute set and we probably did like 7 iterations.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We were just running around and we were like, mm-hmm. Guess we're going to do another one. Guess we're going to do another one. And we're like, oh, man, there's 8 minutes left on the clock. And after that, I would say we generally average about 4,
yeah.
3 to 5.
Three to five is
But we were just rolling through them. And so,
I don't remember that set at all.
I only remember the second and then the last.
Well, you guys remember those because those ones were really good. Yeah. The first one was like good, but it was like... It's like that kind of madcap. Like,
it was a little
bit more
like hectic.
There's so much happening.
Do you have Benny Hill music going in the background?
There might have been.
Little yakety sax. I remember, what was that one about? Because I remember the blender one.
That was the last one.
That was the very last one
that we did.
I think that was the last
one. Was it the last one?
Yeah, the blender one was.
Oh, the second one was
the Jewish.
Bar mitzvah.
Oh, that's right. I remember the bar mitzvah and
the
confirmation.
The Gentile girl.
Okay, yes. I remember that one now. And what was our first one?
At one point, I think there was magic involved. I think I might have been like a wizard. At one point, I hopped out of somebody's dresser.
I'm pretty sure I was blacked out the entire time, so I have no memory of
this.
I just remember climbing out of someone's drawer.
That sounds about right.
Wow. Okay.
That might have been later that night.
I wanted to see more of that scene you guys did where that horse granted wishes.
I see what you did there, Philip. Isn't there a closet that he goes in sometimes?
Well,
is that what it is?
You guys are about to see the corner.
Oh, no.
Because now is the time of the show where I throw the microphone over to Philip Simondette for a brand new segment that we call...
Phillip's Corner!
It's Phillip's Corner!
So this is a brand new segment. What I'm going to do is I'm going to stare at each of you individually with awkward eye contact, which Megan is sitting across from me, has not looked at me once this entire time.
To be fair, I haven't looked at Matt either, so...
So I'm going to force her to. We're going to make awkward eye contact. I'm going to think of a question and ask it, and she's going to answer it brilliantly.
Without breaking eye contact?
But it's not like staring contest. What if she blinks?
No, she can blink.
I'm okay. Blinking a lot.
She can blink, she can cry, okay. Whatever.
Big Blink 182 fan?
No, but I am a big fan of them when it comes to karaoke music.
Oh, what's your go-to karaoke songs?
I would say I have two. One is The Middle by Jimmy Eat World, and the other one is All the Small Things by Blink
182.
Wow. What's there you go.
Yeah. What's The Middle? Just give me a little bit.
It just takes some time. Little girl in the middle of the ride. Everything will be just right. Everything will be all right. All right.
All right. I usually know songs. I just don't know the names. So if you sing a little bit, I'm probably going to join it.
I broke eye contact four times, but there you go.
No, it's expected. It's Philip.
All right.
This is the cruelest thing I do, forcing people to look at me.
It's really awful.
Aaron.
You're doing so good, Aaron.
If you were stuck in the middle of the worst situation, but then you got out of it, how would you celebrate?
How would I celebrate getting out of the middle of the worst situation ever? Yeah. However the hell I wanted. I would drink probably heavily. I would do other things to make myself feel good.
Well, with a question that vague, the answer can be just as vague. Yes.
It was a pretty vague question, but I'm looking forward to the opportunity for it to actually happen. It sounds like a blast.
Wait, you're looking forward to being in the worst situation?
No, I'm looking forward to getting out of it. Yeah, because wow, heavy drinking and doing things that make me feel good sounds awesome.
You can do those things just like anytime. On the weekend.
That is a weekend.
What if the awful thing she's stuck in the middle of is like a dry county and nothing else to pleasure oneself with?
You can always find something, Philip. You can always find something.
What is this podcast rated?
We put a parental advisor.
All right.
Yeah, you can swear, fuck shit, ass.
That's all Matt knows. Those are the only swears he knows.
Yeah, if you say any others, he'll be teaching me.
Eric. How young were you when you like started swearing in earnest?
That's a good question. I was probably like 10 or 11.
And where did you learn them from?
Probably just older kids. Like my parents never swore. Not until I was like deep into high school.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like in high school, they, you know, suddenly my dad would drop something and God damn it, you know, shit, you know? And it was like, and it was weird because it was just like, oh, all right. Like, I was a really good kid, and I had a lot of, like, teachers and stuff fooled about, like, what kind of mouth I had on me. Like, I had one time I was just going through a normal swearing tirade at, like, a basketball practice, and then my coach walked in, he was like, Eric Simons, what are you, and I was like, what, this is how I roll, coach. But yeah, I don't know, something around there. I guess I don't. Do you know when you started swearing in earnest?
Oh, I don't have answers to any of these questions.
I know. I'm just wondering, like, do you guys know when you started just like
swearing? I started swearing at a very young age.
I remember one time all of us individually got pulled up from the basement where we were playing to like have a sit down with my parents because somehow we had learned, I don't remember what the word was, maybe pussy.
What?
And we were using the word pussy. And we were like kids, like to the point where I didn't even know what it was. We were just using the word. And so we each had our conference with my mom and dad. You're not allowed to say pussy anymore. Also, I have a cousin named Dylan, and his nickname was Dildo, which when my mom heard us screaming to him on the playground, not knowing what Dildo was, she
was like, I don't know if I like carried this with me, but I remember when I was pretty young, maybe like 6 or 7 or 8, I don't know. I was watching like Comedy Central with my dad, and some comedian was using the term balls in a way that I could tell was not like
basketball
or whatever. And I just asked him, I was like, what is balls? What is he talking about? And my dad was very just like, oh, I think he means testicles. Just like, and I just was like, okay. And I don't know if like that, like then carried on to me, like spreading it on the, in like the yard or something. But I do remember like, oh, okay. It was, he just very, he was like, oh,
God damn,
he just
Eric
testicles.
Simons taught all my kids with balls on.
Another thing that I think is really funny. My mom used to hate the Wu-Tang Clan.
Okay. They ain't nothing to fuck with.
They ain't nothing to fuck with. But my mom, like, I was a little bit older, and I was probably like 13, 14, and I was getting into hip hop, and she was like, I just don't like their name. It's like, it's blah, blah, blah. And I come to find out that I think she thought Wu-Tang and Poontang were the same thing. So I thought she thought that a group named themselves after Poontang. And apparently a clan of it. And when I learned that, when I figured it out, like years later, it was just like, oh, mom, it's a sword.
That's an adorable mom thing.
Poontang Clan is a great improv team name. And that has been Phillip's Corner. Thanks, everybody. Yay.
Matt, you asked us to try and rename Matt's Pantry.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I would like to submit for your consideration Matt's Continental Congress. Because just like the Continental Congress was a lot of men convening to ask a lot of the same questions that have been asked throughout history about how men should be governed, and different people gave their answers. So you are asking different improvisers the same questions about how improv should be conducted.
I kind of zoned out there.
Sorry, guys.
You should have seen how glassy they looked.
It was like when they were talking about Horace Grant.
It was like the second paragraph of the Wikipedia article where it's like, all right, I think I got it.
Yeah. I was looking for the more scroll detail. Down. Oh, right. It wasn't working.
Megan, I appreciated it.
Thank you.
Are you guys ready to do some improv?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Next up, Pat!
Well, we always like to start with what would you title your perfect scene? If you were, we could title it.
Philip.
Horace Grant and the Wickets.
All right.
This is Horace Grant
and the Wickets.
On Next at Bat.
Now look here, kid. I just think that you're a little young for professional cricket, all right?
What are you saying?
I'm saying that you're a little young for professional cricket.
My mom told me that if I just try my best at anything that I do, that I could achieve whatever I want.
Look, I'm not saying that you're never going to be a cricket player, because you look like you got a good set of arms, and you look like you can stand for days, which sometimes we have to do. But I don't know that you're going to gel with the rest of my team. You know, they're all men in their 40s.
Just because I'm 12 doesn't mean that I can't relate.
Well, all right. Tell you what, you can meet the guys and we'll give you a try out on the cricket field. And if you work all right with them, then you can stay.
Oh, shucks, Coach McGillicuddy. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, you're a tenacious kid, and if nothing else, cricket requires tenacity. Here's the locker room. Boys, say hello to Timothy McClubbins.
Oh, boy.
McClubbins.
Young.
What kind of mortgage you got, McClubbins?
My mom says that we're on our second one. Is that good?
That's all right.
Hey, the boys and I were just talking about when our testicles dropped. How about you, McClubbins? When'd your testicles drop?
Yeah.
Tell us about them balls.
You mean the cricket one? Or are you talking about the testicles? I don't... I read about this in biology. My mom sat me down one time for a talk about it. But I don't think that my voice has gone through the changes, so I don't think that maybe they haven't... Aw, shucks, you guys.
It's all right, McClubbins. You tell them that... You've never dropped a ball in cricket or in life.
Thanks, McGillicuddy. Wow, you're a real inspiration.
No problem. Now, Trevors, you come on over here.
Yeah, Coach.
You're going to be this boy's mentor, you hear me?
I already got three kids, Coach. I don't know if I need to take on a fourth.
Now, he's not your kid, Trevor. He's your teammate.
Yeah, but I got to watch him. Just like Paulie, Timothy, and Sandra over here.
Look, I don't know why you're bringing your kids to practice in the first place. It's damn well unprofessional.
Hey, don't tell me what to do. You know how expensive it is to put these kids into daycare? Even on a cricket salary of millions of dollars.
Aw, shucks. You know, I'm not going to be any trouble, I promise. You won't even know I'm here. But I really do hope you know I'm here, because I want you to teach me everything. But I'm not going to be a bother, but I'm just going to be here. And you don't have to worry about me or anything. Aw.
All right, kid. You say you got good hands?
I got great hands.
I want you to take Timothy over there and change his diaper. He's colicky, so be careful.
Well, if you think it'll help in my cricket game. All right.
There you go. My God. This kid's hands are soft and fast.
It's done.
All right. Well, that's pretty good. But what kind of mallet you swing?
Well, I guess I haven't picked one out yet. My mom said the mallets are kind of like Excalibur. The right one will come to you. And when you pick it up out of a rock, you'll know that it's yours because you'll actually be able to get it out of the rock. So I assume that if I just go over to the wall of paddles there, one of them will call to me.
I mean, I guess.
They're all now, pretty, listen here, McClubbins. This isn't Ollivanders, all right? You can't just wait for a cricket mallet to pick you.
Well, I think I'll take this one.
What the hell?
God damn it, a mallet just flew by my face. What the fuck's going on?
Hey, now listen here, a mallet just chose McClubbins.
All right, kid, here's the next thing you need. You seem to handle a mallet all right. You got the fastest damn hands I've ever seen.
Thank you, sir.
But we need to give you a nickname. We can't go around just calling you a kid or... What's your name again?
It's McClemens, sir.
No, it's not. Your name from now on is Twinkles.
Now, listen here, everybody. We are at the 20th Annual National Cricket Championships. Where the six counties of England are going to gather together.
Twinkles.
For the ultimate title in national cricket. That's right, the National Cricket Championship.
That's right, and we're here at day four of just the first match.
That's right, it's been epic.
I could really use a sandwich.
The new player on the field that says a name is Twinkles.
Oh, that's right, that's that controversial Manchester kid.
Been hearing a lot about this Twinkles character.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's bring him on up to the booth, see what he's got to say.
Hey there.
Twinkles, they tell us that you're the savior of Manchester cricket. Is that true?
Well, I don't think I really saved anything. I mean, I saved a nickel once, but that was just because I wanted some gum.
I heard that all the water in the water fountains turned to wine ever since you joined Manchester.
That's true. I'm not really allowed to have any of it. Well, you know, being that I'm 12 and everything, but everybody seemed pretty excited about it.
I heard that as soon as you started playing cricket, all of the statues in Manchester turned to gold. And when the kids walked up and peeled it away, there was chocolate underneath. And no kid in Manchester has been hungry since.
Well, I just think that everybody should have chocolate. I don't know, you guys. I'm really not that big of a deal. I just really wanted to do... what I wanted to do.
Got a news report here from our affiliate. It seems that ever since your voice has been on the radio, there's been world peace.
Aw, shucks, you guys. I mean, I guess you can say that if you believe it, it'll happen, right?
It sure seems so, kid. Sure seems so.
All right.
That was pretty good.
That was pretty good.
That was a pretty good scene, guys.
Hey, Philip and Matt. I mean, you guys just jumped right in.
Falling right in there, man.
Yeah. Well,
but I think we can all agree that it wasn't a perfect scene yet.
Not yet.
Because this is our first go.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you guys think?
I think that I'm not sure that cricket was really what we...
Do we know
the only thing I know about cricket is sticky wickets. I was about to bring it in, but that would have been it. I would have been
cricket is just not, it's not a compelling sport.
No.
It's not a compelling sport at all.
No.
And if this thing's going to touch the world, then while that does touch a decent amount of a hemisphere...
Yeah, British people.
It doesn't really... Yeah.
India.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't really hit everybody.
No, not at all. So what sport is more universal?
And quite frankly, it was called Horace Grant and the Wickets.
You're right. So
we didn't bring Horace Grant.
Basketball, right?
I mean, yeah. Basketball hits a lot more.
It does.
It sure does.
It's an international sport these days.
I felt like, Eric, your mentor character.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like...
Trevor.
Yeah, exactly. He needs a reason. He ultimately does want to help this kid out. So I feel like he needs more of a reason. Like, these are all Americans playing basketball. And maybe, you know, he's like a Frenchman. He's a Frenchman who's come to the U.S. to play basketball, and he feels
like Tony Parker.
He knows what it's like to be the outsider.
Right. He's such an outsider that he actually ends up needing this kid just as much as this kid needs him.
Yeah.
All right.
So, do you guys like the whole hero's journey? Like, he has a hard time at first, and then eventually wins everybody over. Or should we just what do you guys think?
I think we see where this one takes us, and go from there.
Okay. Yeah,
absolutely.
All right. Let's do it.
Let's try it. Let's try it from the top.
Hey, you, Grant, get over here.
Yes, sir.
Now listen here, I was watching you play hoops with your friends over there. You call those kids your friends?
Well, you know, they're just the neighbor kids. My mom makes me go out there and play with them sometimes.
Shut up, they're not your friends anymore.
Get over here and play with us,
Come
Horace.
Come and play with us, Horace.
Yeah, you and your stupid glasses goggles.
Hey, you kids, shut up. You seen this kid throw a basketball? Have you seen him dribble? Have you seen him shoot?
This coach is wearing suspenders. You shut up, coach, suspenders.
Yeah, you got all those suspenders on. You're looking suspendery.
You're wearing a belt, too. That doesn't even make sense.
Hey, now, listen here, kids. You may look at me as suspenders, coach, but I'm here to tell you that I am the coach of one of the most successful basketball teams of all time, the Chicago Bulls.
Whoa. The Chicago Bulls?
That's right.
Even I've heard of them, and I don't own a television.
We're on every poster. We're on every radio station. We're on every television channel.
You're on my sheets on my bed. Not you. The symbol of the Chicago Bulls.
I was going to say, kid, that'd be downright weird. But listen, I want to bring you in. Meet the guys.
What? Are you serious?
Yeah, I think you've got the makings of a fine basketball player someday.
Well, thanks, Mr. Jackson.
Yeah, no problem. Just call me Bo Jackson. Basketball coach.
I'll follow you anywhere, Mr. Jackson. Let's go.
All right.
Ding, 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 ding. Now those two just traveled all the way up from Mexico City,
boom, 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 boom,
all
boom,
the way
boom,
through boom, Southern boom, Texas. Boom, boom, took a little boom, stop on in the bayou for some chicken and some grits. And then they head up that Mississippi on a raft till they hit the windiest city in all the United States, Chicago.
Now listen here, team. I got a kid I want you to take a look at. Well, go on, kid. I can't help you out. You got to make your own way with these guys.
Look at this kid's stupid goggles.
All right, listen. Okay? I may be nearsighted, but I wear these goggles to protect my glasses that I have to wear all the time. I also have astigmatism, so I can't have contacts. And my name is Horace, okay? My name is Horace.
Well, you sound Horace.
Oh my gosh.
This is Jacques.
I'm aware. You're Jacques Cousteau's.
That's right. This is our Frenchman, Jacques Cousteau.
Yeah, I guess if anybody's going to be friends with him, it's going to be Jacques, that dirty Frenchman.
Yeah, now we won't try hanging out with us. Go hang out with the kid, yeah. Frenchie.
Yeah, Frenchie.
No one wants to hang out with you, BJ Armstrong, or you, Will Paxton.
You just smoke your beret cigarettes.
Ugh, these Americans, you'll never get any headway with them, huh?
How do you do that? How do you put up with the constant making funs ofs? I don't know how to do that. Everybody looks at me and makes fun of me all the time. It doesn't matter where I go.
You get used to it, and eventually you just learn to not care. And you talk behind their backs. You see BJ over there?
Yeah.
You know what we like to call his name?
What?
Bacon Jammer.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
Hey, Bacon Jammer Armstrong.
Whoa, you're incredible.
Yes.
If it's not too much to ask, I don't know, maybe... Can you show me the ropes? Can you help me out?
You seem like somebody who I should be friends with. Oh, can we be friends?
If you're okay with being friends with a journeyman, I've played for every single team in the ABA and the NBA, and several teams in France.
I will follow you anywhere, sir.
And Horace did, and we cut to a montage of them playing basketball in the gym late at night together. Horace missing every shot.
Every time you miss, you butter my croissant.
Oh, I'm running out of dairy products.
And I'm running out of room in my belly.
We see them playing during all of the seasons of the year. It's spring and they're playing outside. It's summer and they're playing outside and they're both pouring sweat. It's fall and the leaves are... They're crowding the court and they're just all over the ground and they can't see where the three-point line is. And then it's winter and it is snowing and they are out there playing basketball.
Sir, why can't we go into the gymnasium?
If you can't learn to play on the icy river Chicago, you cannot play inside.
It just seems really unsafe, but I'm gonna do it.
We see them playing in an emptied swimming pool. For some reason, Jacques has playing at the bottom of the deep end of an emptied swimming pool.
Deep down, Jacques Cousteau and Horace Grant travel, but not traveling, looking for the basketball.
And we cut to the NBA championship game. It's game 7, and it's tied 3-3. And we see Bacon Jammer on the go down on the court with a sprained ankle.
Oh, look, Bacon Jammer has gone down again.
Oh my God, that's
all right,
hilarious.
Horace, this is your moment, man.
I haven't
put you in because I didn't know if you were ready, but all of our team, their ankles have been so weak. It must be something in Chicago's water, damn it!
I should have practiced at the bottom of the deep end.
I've practiced at the bottom of the deep end. I've practiced on the top of a frozen river. I've practiced through leaves. I've practiced through sleet and snow. I'm gonna do it!
You're ready, then, Horace. You go out on that court, and in this last minute 30 seconds of this final game, you show us what you're made of.
Looks like Captain Bo Jackson is replacing Bacon Jammer with the new kid.
Is that Horace Grant?
Yeah, Horace Grant.
Horace Grant is coming into the game for the first time all season. And it looks like, boy, is he nervous. He is just pouring sweat.
It's all nerves but strong ankles.
Strong ankles, but it looks like about 11 years old.
You can do it. You can do it. Remember what Jacques said.
Always finish your cigarette.
And it looks like they're throwing the inbounds play with 7 seconds to go, and the ball goes to Horace.
My goodness, do you think he can do it? He's dribbling down the court.
Six.
He's passing. He's getting the ball passed back to him. He dodges.
They're going to give Horace the shot.
Three.
Horace.
Up. Two.
Yes, it's for you.
Basket.
Swoosh.
We. You did it, Horace.
Thanks for believing in me, Jacques Cousteau.
Thank you for giving me breakfast for 12 months.
It's been an honor.
Post-game interview with Horace. Horace, after you've gotten done with the middle of the most difficult thing of your life, what are you going to do?
I'm going to do anything in my power to find all of the things that please me.
That was pretty good. That was a lot better. That had so much more emotion behind it.
Yeah.
I mean, basketball is a passionate sport.
It is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was easy to make it really dramatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although I felt like, Matt, you made the point beforehand of like, where this is just such a traditional hero's journey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he is so successful at the end. What satisfaction is there really in a successful end to the story? If we listen to the Russians, there is no satisfaction in a happy ending.
Or the Stones.
Yeah. Although there sounded like there was self-satisfaction.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, for the audience.
Oh, right. Right. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
I feel like for the audience, we need to turn this traditional story on its head.
Ooh,
that's a good point. And maybe there should be a little bit of loss along the way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And do you know what? Eric, thank you so much for trying out the French thing, but I really feel like the French have had such a, like, we've had a generally positive relationship with the French, but it would be way more convincing if you were Russian and everyone was excluding you.
All right, so let's do a recap here. Let's do a recap.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like we're gonna try turning the story on its head. We're gonna go with the Russian mentor as opposed to the French mentor. I feel like is my character lacking in anything, you guys? I feel like there's a way that we could flesh the coach out a little bit.
I actually think that he while the coach character, I mean, clearly he's the coach. He has a successful team.
Yeah.
But I don't think he knows what he's doing at all.
Yeah. I think you have a tendency to speak in rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. I'm desperate. I'm secretly incompetent, and I am an aspiring Dr. Seuss.
Yes.
Okay.
And perhaps...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Perhaps you also hate Horace.
Oh, my God, I secretly hate Horace. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
But you know that he's your only chance, so it's like a love-hate thing.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
All right. Shall we?
Now listen here, kid. If my team's going to have any chance, then you have to come and join us in the intricate basketball dance. Now, I can't deny that you disgust me, but I accept that this is the way that things have to be. So I will take you to come and join my team, but I have to warn you, my guys are nasty and they're also mean.
I think I can do it. I'll try, I guess.
Now listen here, I don't want some fancy little twink. I don't want to hear that you can only think. If you think you can do it, then you go out there and do. And if you can't, well then you're no more to me than dog poo.
Sir, that was really harsh, but I accept your constructive criticism. I'm going to do this. I can be a part of the team and I can help.
Now, for my team to be any good, we need some outstanding players. Because in the past, we've only won on my whispered prayers. I know that as a coach, I'm just no damn good. But hot damn, basketball sure gives me wood.
That was a lot of information to take in right there, sir. But I still feel confident that I'm the person that you need.
Well, then let me introduce you to the guys. And man, check out their awesome basketball thighs.
God. Guys... Coach said that one of us has to mentor this little twerp, but I'm not doing it.
I'm not doing it. I'm too busy doing squats.
I'm too busy looking at his stupid glasses goggles.
Your thighs are incredible.
Don't stare too long.
Oh my God.
Kid, I wouldn't even try to talk to the Ruski.
Vladimir Patinka?
He'll turn you into a communist bastard immediately.
I'm the best point guard this league has ever seen.
Next to Billy Joe Armstrong.
Equal distribution. Oh, don't get me started on BJ. More like Baron of Jump Shots. He never passes the ball. Please call me Pinky.
Now, listen. When training for this team, have no fear because there is no better mentor than Vladimir.
She's used that one before. It's not original.
I have a feeling that you and I, we're going to work really well together. Pinky, will you help me?
I help everyone equally. I always will. Now, lift me up and put me on the top shelf. I need to nap.
Yes, sir. You're quite light. I wasn't expecting that.
I look dense. But I'm full of air. That's how I dunk so easily.
You're light on your feet. You're the lightest there is. I've always admired you.
Just like communism, at its core, there's nothing. And now I don't have a rhyme for nothing.
Does Coach even know anything about basketball?
Or communism?
Or
rhyme structure. Quite frankly, they just put them on the team as a scapegoat. They don't expect us to win a single game, and thus far, they were right 32 times.
Well, Pinky, I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to help us win a game.
We cut to a montage of them watching old basketball game footage on the television and taking copious notes. And then we see them out on the court trying to mimic the exact same successful strategies that they've seen. We see them doing just like some sweet dude bonding time where they get to know each other. Like they go to Vladimir's mother, who's a Russian immigrant, and they're like chilling at her house.
Eat all the meats.
Yeah, and she's like making them some really sweet Russian cookies and like dumplings. Some dumplings, and it's real great. And then we see them back out on the court, and then they're practicing again.
You want to know the only secret to being successful basketball player?
Sir, I feel like that was the entire reason that you were supposed to mentor me. Like, we've been doing all of this stuff, and all I've wanted to know was the secret.
I believe you just need a little water, which in my mother language translates to vodka. Here, drink with me, brethren.
Sir, you want me to you want me to drink this?
Ching.
All right, now guys, we're at the finals of the NBA, and I'm gonna go ahead and pick which players will play. Now you look all right, and you look fine, but oh man, Horace, you've crossed the line. Did you show up drunk? Oh, man, you put me in a nasty, mad funk. You're off the team. You're out of here. Oh, and your breath smells like beer.
Don't say a word. Now, coach, you have been pinned in behind. But if you kick off Horace, you also kick off mine.
Oh, this is the nicest thing anyone's ever done for me.
Now listen here, Vladimir. Are you also speaking in rhyme? Are you having a coup? Because this isn't the time. We've made it here. We're at the very top. And now this whole ship you want to rock? That's not cool, dude. That's not savvy. And, oh man, I just want my mammy.
Coach is really sad, but I feel really happy. Because I feel like I didn't just get a mentor. I feel like I got another father.
No, Horace, you'll remember first thing I have you do for training.
Yes.
I want you to do that to basketball coach, and then we go win NBA champion.
Coach, I'm going to put you up on a shelf now.
And we see Vladimir take over control of the team. And they go out on the court and they start playing. But he puts Horace on, and Horace is drunk because they just had vodka together. And the team starts falling apart. And we see that this was Vladimir's plan the entire time.
Vladimir, am I doing it? Are we winning?
If you know the strategies of Muhammad Ali, you will follow with me. Oh. We will rope-a-dope the stupid opponents, and now we will get thousands of buckets.
And we see he pulls off his jersey, and underneath it is another jersey that's the other team's jersey.
No, Pinky, what?
Why for is- just 4 minutes, I will be San Antonio Spur.
Oh, God.
Oh, I drop a ball again. I'm a stupid Spur.
I feel duped.
In the background, we see Manu Ginobili and Tim Duncan high-fiving, while Tony Parker is in the background doing like a little dance.
Boris Duh is just eating a sandwich.
Wow, you guys.
Wow.
Wow.
That
was the perfect scene.
Perfect scene.
Yeah. Next up, and that's our show. Thank you to Murmur for joining us. Thank you to
Megan,
Aaron,
Eric,
Murmur.
And now we know why you're called Murmur. All of the mystery is gone.
That's right.
So you are currently doing a show. Could you tell the listeners when they could come see you?
Sure. Every Friday in March and April, we have the 9:30 spot at Huge Theater.
Woo-hoo! Yay. And if you come at 8 o'clock, the 8 o'clock ticket also gets you into the 9:30 show. It's just $14. And you can also see Trust Pit, which is the deconstruction group from
Throwback Night.
Most recent Throwback Night. So come check it out. or afterwards as Lady Friend and the Adventures of Tim, Troy, and Damien. Also, two great shows on either side of us, and a really weird show in the middle. Yeah. There you go.
Awesome. And do you have a website or a Facebook page that you'd like to plug so people could keep up with what you're doing?
Yeah, so if you want to follow us on the Facebook, I believe you can find us at facebook.com/murmurimprov. No exclamation points.
No.
And so you guys are performing at Huge Theater. That's Huge Theater in Minneapolis at 31st and Lindale. To find out more about what's going on at Huge Theater, go to hugetheater.com and you can see their lineup of all long-form based improv happening 6 nights a week. Philip, what's going on in your improv life?
Well, you can see me in the Painters this Friday at Bryant Lake Bowl. We're on the ticket with M4W, License to Krill, the stand-up of Sydney Oxborough, and a magician.
That's right. Does the magician have a name?
Thank you. I don't know the magician's name.
Everybody who who pimps this just says that it's a magician.
Yeah.
It's on there somewhere, but I don't know the magician's name.
If you're going to be at the BLB on Friday anyways for Philip's show, you could also come check out Manners and Misconduct, improvised Jane Austen, which will be running at the BLB Fridays and Saturdays the rest of March at 7 p.m.
And the next round of Troika is happening, and I am in another Troika group.
You're cheating on this Troika group?
I'm not cheating.
Yeah, you are.
Well,
it won't last.
Well, this is going to be the second round. The right division just happened last week. I'm a part of the left division, and it is a group called Originally Three.
And who's in the group with
you? It is myself, Janelle Blaisdell, and Cicely Lane.
Mm-hmm.
Man, sorry, we totally just hijacked this time. we're gonna pimp Philip's show, and we were like, yes, we will jump on that back.
No, this is great. That's a good team. Eric, do you have anything coming up?
I'm currently performing with the Theater of Public Policy. So awesome. If you're like, I like improv, but I also like knowing what's going on in the world.
if I had to make a choice, which one should I do?
It's like, you don't have to make that choice anymore.
What can I do about it, Eric?
You can show up at Bryant Lake Bowl Monday nights at 7 for the rest of March.
Okay.
And we'll be interviewing some pretty cool people. We're interviewing Congressman Keith Ellison this Monday. I would go to the website and see if there's still tickets, but I'm pretty sure that one is if it hasn't already sold out.
It sells out pretty...
Probably be sold out by the time that this actually is posted somewhere.
Yeah, that's probably true. But you can get tickets to the upcoming show.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, terrific. Anything else you guys want to
promote? Yeah, one more thing. I will... The Life Impromptu, which is improvised Wes Anderson, is also happening at Huge Theater at March and April, Saturdays at 8 p.m. So I also direct that one, so come check it out.
Yeah, it's a huge cast too. Otherwise you could list them all, but we don't have that much.
Like the Grant family big.
Yeah, like the Grant family big. Exactly. So Philip, what else do we got? Where are we?
Keep in touch with us on Facebook, facebook.com/nextatbat. Send us an email, nextatbatpodcast@gmail.com. And check out us and other great podcasts on noisepicnic.com.
And as always, check us out on iTunes. Subscribe to our podcast, rate and review. Let us know what you think of what we do. So tune in next week when we're going to have a brand new guest. Until then, as always,
praise Jibosh.